Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 118. Hello, everybody. I am Mo from Metal Hammer, and I'm here with Elle from Metal Hammer, and I'm here with Stephen Hill, sometimes from Metal Hammer, sometimes from Riot Act. Always nice. Thank you. How are you both?
Always nice, mate. Always nice. So you said it yourself.
You guys were properly, I actually panicked then because I realized they were both waiting for me to finish. I can see them on the Zoom just like looking at me, like seeing where I'm going to go with this. So cheers. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us, both of you.
Right.
We did take a week off last week, of course. That was because, we decided it didn't quite feel right with everything that was going on in the States at the time, regards to the Black Lives Matter movement and all the just insane scenes that were coming out of there. It just felt a bit weird to then be sitting on a podcast and going, oh, it's a new Hellstorm album out. But, you know, the fact is, of course, that this isn't a temporary thing. This is part of a movement that is ongoing. And for those that haven't seen the thing that we posted across all the Louder websites about the Pause the Show initiative and Blackout Tuesday and all the rest of it, you know, we've had a lot of conversations at Metal Hammer about what we can all do better and how the metal scene can do better as well. And I think one of the interesting things that I've read from a lot of different people in the metal scene this week is this rhetoric of like, oh, you know, the metal scene doesn't judge people by their color. And, you know, if you fall down in the pit, we pick each other up. And I've seen that exact line used about 20 times, it seems like, over the past couple of weeks. But I think there is a lot more that we can do better in the metal scene when it comes to recognizing racism and challenging racism and representing people better. And if people aren't really sure about that, or they want maybe a more insightful thing on that than I can provide, I would highly recommend people go over to the Metal Hammer website to read the excellent Lena Dawes piece on her experiences about racism in the metal scene and how we can kind of do better to challenge that. So yeah, it's something we're moving forwards with, and you know, I think we could all do better, and that is what we should do, I think.
I actually interviewed Layla about, what was it, like 6 years ago? Yeah, that's what I said. About 6 years ago, when her book came out, and I interviewed her for the magazine at the time.
I remember,
and
yeah.
She's a really, really interesting person, like super passionate about the music, like unwilling to, I mean, that thing you said about, oh, if people fall over in the pit, then we pick them up. I mean, if your kind of baseline for being a good person is if you see somebody getting trampled on by 30 people, it's not really, you know, when people go like, oh, it's the least I can do. I mean, that literally is the least.
I mean, metal would have some next level problems if our philosophy was, if you see someone down in the pit, kick them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But she's really, really like super passionate. She's been around some massive, brilliant bands. And I love talking to her. I thought she was fucking excellent. And that piece is fucking excellent as well. Yeah,
definitely. Really and I mean, you know, we posted it up on Facebook this week, went up earlier this week. And, you know, I guess it's the sad reality of Facebook and social media that you do kind of get some, you know, dissenting voices and people that are there cause trouble. But I also saw a lot of interesting discussion about it and some quite healthy debate about it as well. So, you know, there's a lot of conversation to be had for sure. And, you know, it doesn't stop here. Those will be ongoing as the metal scene works out what we can do to help and do a bit better. I mean, that all said, there's a lot of stuff going on this week. We're going to talk about downloads coming up. Download TV is on this weekend, of course. It should have been downloads this weekend. Obviously, the only thing that has actually turned up is the weather, because it is fucking miserable outside. Can't say I'm too surprised about that. Have any of you seen the Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I saw it, yeah. I was pretty excited by it. And then I saw it and I did just at the end go, oh, wow, it probably won't be very good, but... Like, they look well too old to still be going, oh, dude, you know what I mean? It just looks really weird. I wondered if they would have moved the characters along at all. I was sort of hoping they would have done that, but then it wouldn't really make it a Bill and Ted film. And it's quite weird.
Part of the joke, isn't it, that they're still old?
Yeah,
they've got the thing about them playing the open mic night, right? So it's like they're literally the same people, but like 20 years or whatever have passed. And it's like, what have you been doing for the last 20 years. Because I had the same thing when they opened their mouths and started talking. I was like, this is weird. But then they're caricatures, aren't they? So you have to like just go with it. It's fun.
Yeah, totally. It would have been interesting if they'd done something like, you know, they're both like bankers or something. They just completely changed. It's William and Theodore, and that's like the character.
It was a financial crisis, but somehow profited.
Yeah. That's the film they should have made. That's what were Bill and Ted doing during the recession? That's the film. Definitely.
David Fincher directing it. Yeah, that would work really well. Yeah, I would watch that. But yeah, I think it looks pretty. Like, the thing is, it's one of those things where you go, I don't really care what it looks like in a trailer. I'm still definitely going to watch it because those films were so great when I was a kid. Yeah. Soundtrack wise, just everything about it. If you were like even vaguely interested in rock music, it just felt really, really exciting to see like, you know, a film about two stoner rock dudes. And but I still, it will probably be crap, to be honest. But hey, you
know. I don't know. I've got a good
first time though. Like, objectively crap, but it's just a bit of fun, isn't it? I don't think I actually watched it till I was like 20. I watched it like one day with my dad, like way after it came out.
Are they crap? Because I only remember him being really good.
It's funny. It's a funny film. It's like, it's objectively quite rubbish, but it's funny.
Oh, I don't know if I'd say it's objectively rubbish. I think that's a bit far. The thing with films like that is
rubbish, like, it's not enjoyable, because I think it's really good. It's really funny, but it's not like, you don't go there looking for like a complex story. And
do you think there are many people who just aren't into any aspect of rock and metal culture at all who genuinely love those films? Because I think maybe, I guess it's kind of what maybe I was saying, but they're so made by and for people in a certain demographic, and everything around it really is kind of based on that. Unless you just, I mean, you're just particularly mad on time travel films or something, but it's just, it's all so kind of wrapped in this like, yeah, kind of thing. If you don't have a natural affinity for a bit of that, you might just be a bit like, what is this?
Yeah, I think people like who don't like rock and metal like Wayne's World. I think Bill and Ted are probably the same. I think maybe it's a bit of, like, I watched Airheads a couple of like months ago, and that hasn't aged great, but just going like, oh, it's got a Fugazi sticker on his van was enough to make me go like, what a great film. What a great film. He had a Fugazi sticker on his van. Then give it an Oscar, like, do you know what I mean? That was sort of enough for me. But
fair. Well, you can see the trailer on YouTube, and I'm sure we'll be doing lots of that, lots on that film in the months ahead as well. We did, of course, have an interview with the actor who plays Bill, whose name I've forgotten, which is
Alex Winter.
Alex Winter. Thank God for that. Thank you. We did an interview with him as part of our 80s issue, which is really cool. I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about Bill and or Ted on the
map. I think it's going to be really fun.
I like the trailer. It looked low budget, but not in like I don't mean that in a negative way. It looked like it was kind of a quite 80s tinged, fun, dorky sci-fi movie. I don't even know if it counts. I mean, it is sci-fi, but it's not really sci-fi, is it?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It looks like the old ones, right? It looks like
barely
any time's passed.
I like the beats of it as well. I did quite like the thing that they are just a couple of losers and they were supposed to like change the world and they haven't. They've just been crap. And it looks like they got Death back as well with the original actor. So
yeah,
that is vital. I hope they kind of address George Carlin not being in it as well, because he was such a big part of the originals. And Rufus was such a big character as well. But we shall see. I guess the big thing happening in rock and metal this week is that it was supposed to be Download Weekend, but as far as I'm concerned, it's still Download Weekend, because Download TV is a thing. Download are going to be putting out a load of fun stuff across the weekend coming over on YouTube. And there's going to be bands creating some new stuff for it. I think some Q&As and interviews and other bits and bobs. There's going to be some kind of, I think maybe some documentary type things as well or something like that. I think there's Doom Yoga or something like that. Some kind of yoga things happening. So there's loads of fun stuff going on. And then, of course, into the evenings, there's going to be hours of highlights from Download Years Gone By. The official blurb says, on the Friday night, Kiss will take centre stage with a replay of the best moments from their 2015 headline set. while on Saturday, Iron Maiden will provide nostalgic performances, Legacy of the Beast snippets, and something special just for Download TV. Interesting, what will that be? On Sunday night, the attention will switch to System of a Down, with Download TV taking fans on a trip exploring the band's history at the festival, featuring performances from 2005, 2011, and 2017. And there's going to be stuff from Deftones, Baby Metal, Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, Creeper, Offspring, Blues Pills, Autobridge, Pretty Reckless, Funeral for a Friend, Volbeat, Darkness, Bowling for Soup. I'm going to add Killswitch Engage because I remember that they were on there, and I'm hoping they're going to play something from some of the Jesse sets because they've all been great. That's just me making stuff up though. So yeah, loads of good stuff. You going to tune in? I'm tuning in.
I'm going to tune in. And excitingly, the weather in Donington is like around 20, 21 degrees, lots of rain, some sun, sort of sticky, hot, rainy weather. But in London, where I'm going to be on Saturday, it's 24 degrees and no rain.
Really?
So So I could sit in my garden with my laptop and have a lovely time.
That is some bullshit. I'm only, I only live 25 miles away from you and it's going to be rainy and about 5 degrees colder here.
I don't know what the weather's going to be like for me. And I don't care because I'm going to stay indoors and I would complain about it anyway, wouldn't I? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
That is one of the main things of that I feel both of you will miss about this year is not, is the Thursday at Download or Friday morning at Download listening to me grumbling about the weather, which we, I mean, to be fair, I have only done it for the last 11 years.
So. I think in 2017, when it was that really rainy one, was it that year? You turned to me and you said, I'm literally never going again. Show me a picture of what I look like now. If I ever say I'm going to go again, this is never happening again. I'm never going. And I'm like, Steve, you are.
And he went again twice.
Shut up. I was like, stop depressing me. Stop ruining my joy.
Steve's going to tune on YouTube, put it on his TV, and then stand with his back to the TV, pour water over his head and just moan about it.
I mean, that does sound better than Kiss in 2015, to be fair. So.
I don't think I watched them in 2015. Were they not good?
No, not really.
There was a year where I had a car accident and Kiss were like the, one of the only bands that I saw before I had to like go home from the car accident, and the set was terrible.
Kiss were a fucking car accident.
I can't remember what year. It was about 10 years ago that was.
That was, you're thinking of 2008, and I would argue Kiss were fucking great that year. I had a great time.
No way. But I will say this, I'd never seen them before, and I didn't go to watch it as a Kiss fan. They just looked like they didn't have any energy and couldn't really perform very well.
I don't remember that. I mean, maybe I was just swept away with it because that was the first time I'd ever seen Kiss, to be fair. But if you're talking about the set I am, it was the same year the Offspring and Lost Prophets headlined.
I don't know because I had to go home because I was in a car crash.
All right, fair enough.
But vintage year.
Not the most vintage year, but that's all right.
The one where they rearranged the site to have a different configuration. I remember that much.
Yeah, and loads of it was on concrete and stuff. Blah, blah, blah. They've definitely, I think they've got a much better setup these days. But I thought Kiss were great that year because, yeah, Judas Priest played. And I think Judas Priest got to play a longer set because Kid Rock cancelled. Is that right?
That's correct. It's Motorhead, I think, got a longer set, actually. But
Motorhead, okay. So, yeah, there was Motorhead, there was Judas Priest, and then there was Kiss. I had a great time that day, man. Great.
Guess
time.
Guess why I was in a car accident?
Why?
Because it rained.
Wow.
You know what's funny though is like last year, I mean, I've been really festivaled out over the last few years, and I really felt the fatigue of, you know, going to Bloodstock and Download and Slam Dunk and 2000 Trees and Arctangent and all the stuff. Like, I don't want to sound like, oh, woe is me, but I was like, oh man, I think I just have become really fatigued with festivals. And I kind of teased at the start of the year, I was like, I don't think I'm going to go to any festivals this year.
So it's your fault.
So I'm getting my year off without missing anything. Because like this weekend, if I hadn't gone to Download, I would have been like, oh man, what about Gojira and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, so it's worked out rather well for me, to be honest.
Yeah, so hopefully that makes everyone feel better.
I'm looking forward to sitting in the garden and seeing stuff from like Deftones, Baby Metal. It's going to be good.
No, I'm genuinely really looking forward to this. And I'm glad that I know Glastonbury, you're doing something similar later in the month. I'm really glad festivals are doing this because... God, it's so vitally important at the moment that we can just try and take some opportunities to like feel like we're all doing something together. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm that is the main thing I think a lot of us are missing right now. It's just you can't get that vibe that you're actually hanging out and all enjoying the same stuff, especially with music. So the idea that me and lots of friends and peers and other download goers and stuff will all be sat there watching the same thing I'm watching with some beers and stuff, I think that's going to be really good fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully there's a way to chat as well, because it's been really nice with some of the live shows and live streams that bands have done to be able to like put stuff in the chat box. And I know like Download's got a really active Facebook group that I've seen people posting it into the run up like this week. Everyone's posting their memories and stuff. And like you said, it's a really nice way for people to just for everyone to talk to each other and as well to like connect and stuff. And
definitely
have a bit of a break as well.
We can hang out, lads.
I think that's what we're going to do. Me and you, Mel, I thought we'd already decided we were going to do a little Zoom and then get it on the big telly.
All right, you two decided, did you?
Well, yeah. Look, me and Steve voice note each other about 80 times a day, all right? We haven't got around to extending the wider invite yet. But yes, let's all watch Download. Let's watch Download. It will be good.
I'm not watching it with a moaner.
Oh, well, you changed your tune quick.
That's directed at me, actually.
I know.
That's fine. You probably would. I wouldn't want to ruin Kiss again for you, Eleanor.
No. Let's just talk Download in general then. People are really missing it this year, and it's such an important festival for everybody. It is the biggest rock festival in the UK, isn't it? There's just no doubt about it. I mean, what's your favourite ever Download that you've ever been to ever?
2009.
Yeah. I feel like anyone that went to 2009 just picks 2009.
I mean, it was like, it was actually my first Download as well. I hadn't been to a festival for about 6 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Because of various things going on in my life and, you know, whatever. And I hadn't been to a festival for ages and ages and ages. And every year I would see the Download lineup and I'd go, oh man, I want to go to that. Look, you know, Guns N' Roses and Tool, Metallica, you know, the Sabbath year. I did look at it in 2008, I was like, I'm going this year, I'm going to go. And then the lineup came out and it was Offspring, Lost Prophets and Kiss. And I was like, might leave it a year. But as soon as Faith No More got announced, I was like, I have to go this year. I have to go. Faith No More is still probably my favourite. Well, Tool last year actually is my favourite ever.
I was going to say, actually, because one of the interesting, not really surprising, but quite interesting things about the best ever Download sets vote that we had on the Metal Hammer website, which I believe Steve has written up a lot of the results from that you can read now, is that Tool set, I think, made either the top five or just outside the top five. Number four. I mean, that's great, isn't it? Like, it's so often easy to assume that people will just get nostalgic for the older Downloads like we have. But it was cool to see that Tool set really meant so much to people. 2009 was good, to your point.
Well, the Faith No More, Korn, Limp Bizkit, Killswitch Engage, Billy Talent, five-band run is as good as anything I've ever seen at a festival in my life ever, I think. Faith No More is absolutely incredible. They're like one of my favourite ever bands ever, so obviously that was brilliant. But the Limp Bizkit, I mean, we've spoken about Limp Bizkit turning back up in 2009, and it was carnage, wasn't it? Bedlam. Amazing.
One of the greatest festival sets ever. For me, obviously, you know, Slipknot from that year is the year. It's probably the best festival set I've ever seen. But I think that I genuinely think that if Slipknot hadn't played that year, I think everyone would be talking about Limp Bizkit today. I don't mean in the same like sacred tones, but in terms of like what was the band that year, I genuinely think it would have been Limp Bizkit, because you know what? I can't even remember Korn from that year. And that is saying something, because Korn are one of the greatest live bands in metal. And I've seen them at Download so many times that I can't actually pick out that particular year for them, which really tells you what a lineup it was, because Limp Bizkit just killed it. Just was so good. Came on, started with Break Stuff and just didn't stop. And that was before they kind of were completely overloading their sets with cover songs like they do now a lot of the time.
Banger after banger.
Korn
weren't in great form around that period, to be fair, wasn't it? That was in between the Korn 3 and the self-titled one. So it wasn't like a vintage era for Korn, to be fair, although they were still pretty good. And they ended with that rubbish Pink Floyd cover that they do.
Breaking the wall.
Yeah. But yeah, 2009 in general, I mean, so many of those sets stick out for me. Slipknot, The Prodigy on the second stage.
The Prodigy set was great.
I saw Chris Cornell on the second stage while Marilyn Manson was doing that, like, really infamously bad set. Chris Cornell
I enjoyed that. I know everyone thought it was terrible, but I was excited.
The worst festival set I've ever seen.
I know, but if you're excited to see a band you like, I don't know, I guess on the one hand you could be really disappointed, on the other hand you could just be happy you got to see them, and I was probably in the second box.
I want to know what it would take Marilyn Manson to do for you to turn around and say that was a bad set, because I've been to some of the same Manson gigs as you, and I've turned around and been like, well, this bit wasn't very good. And you're like, no, it was all amazing. Like, I want to know, he'd have to like come off stage, grab you and call your mum a bell end to your face or something. And maybe then you'd consider.
Why would you say that?
Well, I'm going to be honest, Helen, he probably wouldn't, but I'm just trying to think of ways that you would not give Marilyn Manson 10 out of 10.
I mean, maybe it would have been a 10 because, yeah, objectively it didn't mirror a 10, but I still just enjoyed seeing an artist that I like on a stage, and that's fine, isn't it? I'm allowed to.
Absolutely fine. And also, Pendulum were on that day as well, and they were fucking great. First time I think I'd seen because I missed... Yeah, because Prodigy played that day. Oh, I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
But that was one of the played just after. So, yeah, I saw Pendulum, and then I went up to see Chris Cornell, who played in front of about 100 people and did this incredible set. Like, he started with something from that Scream album, which is rubbish. And I was like, oh, no, this is really bad. And then he went into Spoon Man and Cochise, and suddenly it was like, fucking hell, this is amazing. He did a brilliant. And, yeah, and then the Prodigy and then Slipknot. It was great.
So, so cool. Yeah, that's definitely the best download. Download for me. I mean, yeah, Slipknot probably my favourite set. Was that your favourite download overall as well, 2009?
I think my first one was my favourite one, just because it was really just like super fun. It was when I'd been to like Leeds Festival, and in that year that festival was on, I went to Leeds, Glastonbury and Download, which was like massive to go to all these festivals because it was all still quite new for me at the time. And Download was obviously the first one, and I didn't even know about Monsters of Rock. I'd never heard of it before. I don't think I even knew about that until after Download, to be honest, because I was a teenager and just didn't know about that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I didn't like Iron Maiden because I wasn't into them, but obviously Marilyn Manson, was he there?
Oh, the first one?
Yeah.
Like the first one?
Yeah.
He was, yeah.
And
Biscuit cancelled, and then Zwan played.
Audioslave.
No, I really enjoyed Zwan and Audioslave because Zwan, they just released that record, and I was getting into Smashing Pumpkins at that time, so I thought that was really cool. And then there was like, I'm sure I've said this before, there was like a massive rainstorm, and everyone sort of lifted up this like fabric that was on the floor, which was covering up the wires, and like put it over their head. And then Audioslave played, and it was just like super, super dramatic. Disturbed as well, but on that lineup. And I remember camping next to these two guys who were like, they were like big, like metal guys, but they got drunk and gone and got like, I think it was like nose piercings or something. And they were like, oh no, what are our wives going to say about us? And my friends weren't awake, and I was awake, and they like made me like breakfast and stuff. And like, I sat around and like, had a chat with them and things. And I was like, this is a cool festival. Everyone's really nice.
And some bands played. No, I know what you mean. Like,
I just remember it being really friendly because, my mates weren't awake. These two guys were like, it weren't being like creepy or anything. They're just camping next to us and just having a chat with them. And it was one of my first festival experiences still. I just had a really good time. Yeah. And it also wasn't, it was, I don't know, again, it's probably opening a big can of worms, but I just went to that as somebody who went to a festival, whereas every other Download festival since that, I went as a journalist, and especially the first couple of years, it was really hard because I was trying to like get into the industry, and I found that a little bit stressful. So that first one was like very pure fun, whereas the next few were a little bit stressful, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. My first one was just not having anything to do with journalism. I went to 2006 was my first one, and me and three of my mates went, and obviously like Reading had fairly decent metal and rock representation in the early 2000s, but by the kind of mid, like they had a good year in 2005 with Pearl Jam. Not Pearl Jam. Pixies, Maiden, Foo Fighters, Marilyn Manson. Like, they had a quite good show in that year. But other than that, it was starting to drop off a lot. And getting to go to a festival that was just all rock and all metal was just mental. Like, seeing Avenged Sevenfold on the main stage.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
It'd be such a big deal. And then see Metallica do Master of Puppets. And yeah, just the vibe around the campsite was just so different because it was all like my people, you know.
That's the thing. It's like when I went to Leeds Festival, there'd always be bands. It used to be a lot more rock and metal back then, and there were a ton of bands that I loved. And when I went to Glastonbury, there weren't so many bands I was into, and I really felt like the lack of rock and metal there. I was like, oh, but Download, you go, and you just know that you're just going to love everything, really. So it was just always more fun.
Yeah,
I think growing up in a world where there was no sort of 3-day metal festival in the UK, for me, like, I mean, the first time I went to a full-blown festival that was just rock bands was Ozfest 98 at Milton Keynes Bowl. And I remember walking in and just being like, I want to see everyone. It's not like I have to go, oh, you know, Cooler Shaker are on in half an hour. I've got to wait until they finish.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of want to see everyone. So yeah, going to Download and being like, here is something which is dedicated solely just to every kind of facet of rock and metal. And I think, like, to be fair to Download, what they've done over the last few years I've criticized where they put bands on the main stage and second stage, and how people haven't, that I think deserve it, haven't necessarily been given the leg up that they should have been getting, like they were getting in the early days of the festival. Despite that, I think that fourth stage being a metal stage and third stage being more of a kind of, you know, teen emo pop punky stage, and then the best of both of those things and everything else being on the main and second stage together, it gives it a really nice eclecticism throughout the festival. And you start seeing the same people around the same stages and stuff. Like, if you like Electric Wizard, you're probably going to want to stay around the fourth stage and watch Obituary and do it. And that's like, gives people a place to go. I think it's actually quite a good idea, if not delivered in the most successful way just yet, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but yeah, I see what you mean. It kind of helps to, you know, create almost like mini communities within the festival over a weekend, which is quite cool. Yeah, it's weird not having Download. I don't quite feel like I miss it right now, but now I can start to see like my Facebook memories and everyone else's Facebook memories popping up. It's a bit like, oh man, this is so weird that we're not doing this.
Yeah, I had one this morning. I'd written something in 2017. It was a Facebook memory about watching Devin Townsend, and it was something like, don't believe people when they say the world is shit because the world is beautiful. And it was like the first thing I saw when I woke up this morning, and I was like, oh, I feel a little bit emotional.
He was wrong.
Yeah, he's been proved massively wrong.
I still think he's right.
That's what optimism will get you.
I still think he's right. You just have to, you know, push through the shit and see the beautiful things.
Push through the shit is a good motto for anybody. Like Download, and I'll tell you what, like, Download's always been brilliant. I've always loved going there, but the last couple actually I've really, really enjoyed, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the weather's been better overall at those two, to be honest. But I remember, like, one of my all-time favourite Download memories ever was 2 years ago when Guns N' Roses played. And even though that set wasn't as good as the one when they did at the London Stadium the year before, I remember being there with a friend of mine and just seeing, like, Axl Rose come out on stage at Donington, of all places, and just say, do you know where the fuck you are? You're at Darlington, baby. I was just like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I can't believe I'm still in the sunshine with a beer in my hand watching Axl Rose say that at Donington with Slash and Duff on the stage as well, you know.
Last year was great. I really enjoyed last year. Slipknot were always good.
Slipknot was so good fun last year.
Yeah, and it was just really like getting to see some of the new stuff, and there was like a massive buzz around that, and they are like the house band of Donington. That was really cool. And then seeing Tool, I'd seen that set in Berlin at the beginning of June when they started the tour, so I'd already seen it, but seeing it in the open air was a really different experience. And obviously most people there were seeing it for the first time, and it was interesting. I know it was interesting crowd wise for the people who were like really into it and the people who were new to it, but just as the sun drops down and having all the lights on the stage and it being really different because they didn't have the screens and the close-ups and things. It was just really, that was really magical. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that is the best thing I've ever seen at a festival ever, I think, that tool set.
It was really atmospheric, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you wait, so when you waited that long for that band to come back, which, you know, they're pretty much my favourite band ever, I reckon. And it was like a religious experience, and the, it just sort of hammered home as to why I feel that strongly about Tool, because I don't think any other band ever in the world ever would have had the balls to go, we're not going to have the video screens, we're going to use them for our own thing, and to play like three or four songs from an album that people hadn't heard yet, that mm-hmm. you've been waiting 13 years for, and to not really address the crowd, and there's nothing really... like that, it's not really about the individual parts of Tool, and it's not even really about them as a band. It's about this kind of weird psychedelic religious experience that they kind of provoke in people. And I could just like feel my legs going and my bottom lip going like throughout so much of that set. It was really good.
And the fact that they didn't need any big production like pyro or anything, and it was, I think it was one of those really weird things where it was like, especially for like the way that you described it as well, if you'd seen it, it was, this sounds a bit wanky, but it's like you could have your own individual experience as well as having a collective experience. I don't know. It was just very like, there's a lot of room in that set for you to sort of take it all in. You know, it wasn't like you're being bombarded with stimuli the whole time. You could just kind of sit back and absorb it all.
Yeah, I think it's a super brave thing for a band to do. And they sounded amazing at a festival with all that kind of stuff swirling around, the wind and, you know, and the outdoor acoustics, which can be really, really fragile. And getting those kind of nuances in their material to come out, I thought was really amazing. And, yeah, it's just like, I think bands, when they play live, especially in positions like that, they get so, so scared of, we have to do something all the time. We have to be engaging all the time. We have to be like reaching out to that person right in the back all the time. And Tool kind of showed that you don't actually need to try and reach out to anybody. If your music is good enough and if your music is engaging enough, you can be as insular like on stage as anything. And just, you know, it didn't feel like the set that you would watch at a heavy metal, quote unquote, heavy metal festival. They're just so different to that. And there's not really any other band that I can think of that could do that. I mean, certainly not on that scale. I was going to say someone like Neurosis or Mogwai, but even they, on that scale, I don't think they could.
No. So, yeah,
that's
always good.
Yeah, no, but it's, you know, it's true. There's been some of my very, very favourite download memories have come in the last couple of years. So we're definitely going to miss it this weekend. But, you know, join us if you're listening. Join us and like tune in, and I'm sure we'll all be tweeting about it and chatting about it as it all unfolds on Download TV. So I'm sure we'll still have some fun. It's going to be good. Let's do the album of the week, which has basically come, and it's a big reason. Some would say the main reason he's on the podcast this week.
Come on,
has come courtesy of Mr. Stephen Hill. So this is an artist who neither Elle nor I had literally heard of 2 days ago. And then Steve messaged me saying, have you heard of this artist, Backwash? And I said, no, not really. And what was really interesting is that even though Steve, obviously you knew kind of where it was fitting sonically, you kind of said it was like a hip hop thing. So I didn't even really think of it in terms of being something that would be relevant to Metal Hammer, but you mentioned that they're kind of, I don't know, you tell a story of how you heard these guys and, well, her.
So to go back, so Backwash is a trans rapper from Quebec in Canada. And she has 3 albums out at this point. This album is called Leave God Out of It. It has nothing to do with him, I believe. Yeah, sorry, God has nothing to do with it. To do with this, Leave Him Out of It is what the record is called. And basically towards the end of last year, I sort of where I got it from, I actually got a shout out another Metal Hammer writer, Rich Hobson, who put me onto a band called More Mother, or an artist called More Mother, who's another hip hop artist who's really, really good, really quite dark, almost like a kind of hip hop version of Lingua Ignota, like very, very difficult and quite challenging. I was just sort of scrolling through my Apple Music the other day, and it was like, because I've been playing that album quite a lot on Apple Music, I had a thing that just said, because you like More Mother, and this record came up. So I put it on, and the first track, which is the title track, the hook from it is the, oh, please God, no, that Ozzy does on Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath. And it even throws in the riff from Black Sabbath, the song towards.
And the way it comes in at the end is so, because like, you kind of think the vocal line is cool enough. It's like, oh, that's really cool. And then where it just kind of comes in this really weird kind of fucked up way at the end. It's just so cool.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things taken from rock and metal on this record. It's kind of a mixture of, I think, punk and hip hop and experimental hip hop and electronic music and in industrial as well. And it's this big kind of meld of sounds, and so much gets done. It's a 10 track, 22 minute long record, but she gets so much done and she goes through so much in that 22 minute time period. There's also When the Levee Breaks, I think, by Led Zeppelin. I think that drum.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
Into the Void by Nine Inch Nails, not this Black Sabbath song, the Nine Inch Nails song is also in the song Into the Void.
I thought it was Reptile.
Oh, yeah, maybe it is. Sorry, maybe I'm thinking Into the Void because it's called Into the Void. But yeah, you're right, actually. But anyway, yeah, there's plenty of kind of touch points for metal fans that I think is that are relevant. But I heard it.
A bit as well in Spells.
There's what, sorry?
Bit of Deftones in the song Spells.
Is it?
Yeah, her vocals sound a bit Chino-y.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a bit like, just the way that, like, Deftones kind of sing. She sings in a kind of very, like, I don't know, sort of in a more ethereal way. Just really reminds me of Deftones.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's got quite a kind of, there's a very satanic feel to it as well, which is obviously very metal. It's very, very dark. At points, I mean, it doesn't really sound like this, but at points, the kind of, the feeling of it is not that far away from something like Zelenada.
Mm.
You know how Zelenada evoked that kind of sort of mystic, spiritual, satanic, ritualistic ideas, that there's quite a bit of that feeling, if not with it being sort of sonically similar, there's quite a lot of that overall feeling surrounding the record. And I just think it's very, very interesting.
I think it's fascinating, and you know, it's one of those things where you know, we all listen to different types and levels of hip-hop, but I just was totally taken aback by it, because even with Steve saying, oh yeah, it samples a bit of Sabbath and stuff, you know, there's other artists that sample, there's quite a lot of artists that sample rock music, like, you know, Get sampled Kahina and Cambria once, just totally randomly, but it didn't suddenly make Get a rock artist or anything like that. But there's just something about the overall vibe of this record that really speaks to me as a rock fan, as a fan of cutting edge, heavy, abrasive, interesting, alternative music. There's some bits on here as well that kind of slightly sonically, but more again in that kind of ethereal, kind of like weird vibe of bands like Health and all those kind of noise rock, electronic-y kind of artists as well. There's a lot of that on here. And what's mad is that we've talked about all these different elements to it, and it's only 22 minutes long. Like, it just kind of comes and goes before you even really realize what's going on.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's rammed with stuff. You know, like, because I was, when I first put it on, and you'd mentioned to me about the Black Sabbath thing, and I was like, oh, I can hear Nine Inch Nails. I can hear, like, Saul Williams, who toured with Nine Inch Nails back in the day. I could hear him, and I could hear a bit of Scarlord, just in, like, the style and the fact that it is on the hip hop side of things, but
the more kind of like like scratchy trap kind of elements of it.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But even though it's got all of these things in, it feels really, really strong. It doesn't feel like some music where you listen to it in 2020 and it's like tiny little bits of songs before it switches because people's attention spans aren't going to last. It doesn't feel like that. Each song feels like its own thing, and it feels like every song is kind of very hard hitting. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, it's really interesting.
Absolutely. And if you go back to kind of some of her older stuff as well, I went straight into the last thing she put out, which was an album called Deviancy last year. I mean, again, it's only 20 minutes long. And there was loads more stuff on there. I mean, there's a track on there called Devil in a Mosh Pit and things like that. And that had some more kind of almost Kendrick Lamar kind of vibes around some of the songs. So she's really like going into a lot of different realms here. But it's the most exciting thing. And obviously, we're not really going to talk a lot about the Run the Jewels album because that is a hip-hop record. But I really didn't think I would be sat here gassing about an album so enthusiastically that wasn't Run the Jewels, because that Run the Jewels album, I was just like, ah, when that came out. And then literally a few days later, Steve pointed this out to me, and now I can't stop listening to this. It's fucking great. I should say as well that this isn't one that's coming out this weekend.
Last week, I think.
I think it came out. Oh, was it that recent?
Yeah, I think so. 2 weeks ago.
Oh, cool. I didn't even realise that, actually. But yeah, we just wanted to do it because it's such an interesting thing.
Well, I think the other thing that we haven't even touched on at all is the kind of the lyrical journey that it takes you on as well. Like I mentioned a lot of kind of satanic stuff, and there's a song called Black Magic, and that hook, like, I fuck with Black Magic, like is really very abrasive and very, you know, if you're thinking like modern hip hop is, you know, quite that kind of mumble rap thing where they're all sort of sit a bit behind the track and it's all a bit kind of lackadaisical, and that doesn't appeal to you as a sort of rock and metal fan. This is a very kind of aggressively spat out flow that she has. And there's stuff like, I mean, it straddles this line, I think, between sort of emotional, confessional, personal, lyrical stuff with that kind of really dark satanic imagery and the kind of the quite cool, the sort of thuggish street strut of the sort of classic hip hop. I mean, Merle, when we were talking about before, you mentioned Eminem.
There's one track on here where just her delivery has that kind of like really angry and stressing at the end of your sentence kind of delivery that really reminded me of Eminem. And I thought that it's just like one tiny element. But again, it's one of a million elements. Like every time I listen to this, there's something else that comes out. You know, I can't remember which track it is that sounds like that, but it's only 22 minutes. You can find it if you go listen to it.
It's 22 minutes. I mean, it's stuff like, you know, there's a song called Black Sheep, which I think is amazing. It's 2 minutes long and expresses so much kind of ire. It's basically about, I think, her transitioning and her family not sort of being accepting of her doing that. And I mean, I've written some of the lyrics down. It says, I think you're mad because you lost control. You want me to fall in line with the X and O's. It's been years since I talked to Grammy, and I think it's pretty sad how I lost the family. And it goes through like her kind of anger and upset at like her family's reaction to her transitioning, and then these kind of suicidal thoughts she has. And then at the end, it's just, she sort of says, but if it all happened again, I'd have done the same thing. And it's really fucking powerful. And the final track, Redemption's got a real kind of Delta blues feel to it, and talks about her family losing a son but gaining a daughter, and all that stuff is like I say, that kind of confessional narrative that goes that this in 22 minutes, I think this takes you on quite an unbelievable journey musically, emotionally, sonically, like in every way. It really takes you on a pretty incredible ride.
Well, she sounds like she's been through so much. I mean, you mentioned earlier that she lives in Canada, but she, in an interview, said that she grew up in Zambia and she lived there for 17 years. Mm. And she went to Canada to go to school and do computer science. But she talks a bit in that interview as well about how she was part of a certain tribe that had spiritual practices that some people would class as witchcraft. And obviously she went over to Canada, and like you said, she's been through all the stuff with the transition, and there's so much in there that's so personal. And when she's delivering the lyrics, it really takes your breath away, doesn't it? Like, it really, like, you feel really sort of taken aback by it, because it's so personal and it's such a, you know, there's so much going on.
Definitely. And yeah, and all delivered within such a short amount of time and in such a kind of heavy and interesting way. Yeah, just a fantastic and fascinating artist. So thank you, Steve, for drawing her to our attention.
That's all right. I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because, I mean, we can't really sit here and go, like, when people think of rap metal, this isn't, you know, this isn't Rage Against the Machine or Downset or
no.
You know, P or anything like that. And it's maybe not even really, I mean, it's certainly not metal in its traditional form, definitely not. But I think if, you know, if we as Metal Hammer collectively are saying that we're going to cover stuff like Scarlord, mm-hmm. or who else,
it doesn't even have to be kind of in that kind of more trap metal realm, like even stuff like Nine Inch Nails and like stuff that's more on the industrial side, like people can make an argument that that stuff's not metal if they want, do you know what I mean? Like, but sonically, and I think really importantly as well, spiritually, this feels like it belongs in our world. And I'm not saying that's trying to justify it, you know, we'll fucking talk about whatever we want here, but like sometimes you hear stuff and, you know, like trap music has a lot of really good, aggressive, cutting edge artists in it, but it's quite rare where I listen to it and think, you know, I could probably play this to pretty much any one of my friends who likes something heavy and find them a little bit of it to go, hey, yeah, you'll like this bit. And I generally think that's on here. But as Elle said, it's not like all these little components just flying around all over the place. It all just fits so seamlessly and in such a kind of succinct fashion. Yeah, it's a killer record. It's very recently out.
If that doesn't take out Saul Williams, like, why can't more bands in our world take out different kinds of artists? You know, it doesn't always have to be metal 100% of the time, but definitely this is, like, lyrically and musically heavy. When I heard it, I was like, immediately, like, this feels like it fits in our world. It just does.
I mean, and it just makes our scene more interesting, doesn't it? Yeah. To have people like, you know, if you're going to complain that, oh, well, that's not what metal is, this isn't anything to do with metal, this is a trap, but it's like, well, you know, then we'd still be all listening to bloody skiffle or something if nothing is ever about to change or not.
It's a skiffle.
Well, I'm going as far back as I can. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This has got, if all kind of metal is born from the blues, I mean, this is basically at its core, you know, a very, very heavy blues record, and that's what metal is. And I think it just makes these stories and these sounds, just including them in our scene, just makes our scene stronger and more interesting and more varied and more vibrant. And I am more than happy to be like, yeah, embrace this artist, because...
Yeah.
Just
there have been something around when I was a teenager about struggling with the church. That would have been good. I would have appreciated that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, there's loads of stuff here that people can identify with, and some stuff as well. You know, she's a kind of voice that we don't have enough of in metal. Certainly from the perspective that you talked about what it's like to transition and being accepted, and you know, it's a really unique perspective that we need more of. So yeah, once touring's back, someone bring Backwash to the UK. But in the meantime, go and check out the album. It's called God Has Nothing to Do With This, Leave Him Out of It, by Backwash. And I should say Backwash is spelt with an X in the middle, because why not? Why not? Make it that bit more metal and cool and weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is this week's album of the week. If we'd had the podcast out last week, we probably would have talked about the 156 Silence album, which is really, really good as well. That came out last week. It's called Irrational Pull. More exciting, heavy, violent, urgent, hardcore music from Pittsburgh, the home of Code Orange. So go check out that 156 Silence album out as well. And there's a new Aversion's Crown album out on Friday, Hell Will Come For Us All. So if you like your meaty deathcore, you're going to be wanting to get in all over that. Eleanor Goodman, would you like to read the first question from this week's questions from facebook.com/Mahama Readers?
Sure. Brave New World by Iron Maiden turns 20 today. This was the first Maiden record that I listened to and was hooked for life. The triple guitar attack and the return of Bruce. What a start to the next century. Where does this rank for you in the post 2000 works? And that's from Vivek Parwar.
Well, I feel like I should handle this one, guys.
Yeah. No. I've never listened to it, so I don't know.
It's good. It might be my favourite Maiden album. It's always between that and Seven Sun. I'm never quite sure. I obviously feel a bit more warmly to Brave New World because I think, like a lot of people, to be honest, it was my first Iron Maiden album. So obviously there was a lot of fanfare for them with Bruce and Adrian coming back. I think a lot of people might make an argument for A Matter of Life and Death. I know a lot of people really love that record as well, and I think that's a fantastic album. But for me, Brave New World is unquestionably the best 21st century Iron Maiden album. Unquestionably. I could make arguments for where the rest of the ranking would be after that, but yeah, Brave New World, best Maiden album of the last 20 years. Best Maiden album of the last 32 years would be my argument.
So, I think A Matter of Life and Death is good, actually.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I know a few people that aren't even big Maiden fans that quite enjoy that album. I think there's something quite raw about a lot of it that people like.
I should really listen to Brave New World. I think, well, I will be at some point soon. I think, Merlin, you're going to do a little Brave New World chat with me one day, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, baby.
I like Blood Brothers.
Yeah, that's a tune. Oh, what a song. What a great band. David Connell asks, obviously, we all rave about great albums. Yes, we do. But what are some of your favourite EPs or even standalone singles? Dog's Blood by Alexis on Fire was great, along with this year's Sugar Horse EP and Be Nice or Go Away by Milk Teeth. That's some great modern shout-outs there by David. Cool that he's repping for Sugar Horse.
Sugar Horse EP is fucking amazing. That is a brilliant EP.
You've talked about that.
Tell me about that, but I've not heard it yet because I'm a terrible human.
Oh my God, Eleanor is absolutely 100% up your alley.
Is it? Yeah. That's what he said. He's like, you're going to love this. He literally texted me yesterday and I was like, yeah, I'll listen to it. And then I just got caught up in something else.
You will bloody love it. It's really good. It's just like real kind of heavy shit mixed with The Cure.
Oh, well.
What, like full-blown gothy sort of post-punk, massive like 80s goth Lost Boys vibes mixed with just...
It really sounds like the best thing ever. I want to listen to it right now.
It's brilliant. They're my favourite new band. You know, you were talking about Holy Fawn before. They got a bit of Holy Fawn about them. Yeah, cool. but a lot heavier. So, yes, I absolutely rep for Sugar Horse. I think they're fucking excellent.
Well, you can't just nick David's suggestion. You
have to come up with your own. Say what a good suggestion.
I've got some other ones.
I've got a couple. Burnt by the Sun by Burnt by the Sun is like four-track EP. It's about 6 minutes long. It's the best 6 minutes of just grindcore loveliness that you will ever hear. But the best one, the best EP, is the Dillinger Escape Plan featuring Mike Patton's Irony for a Dead Scene EP, which is as good as anything Dillinger have ever put out, I reckon. It's fucking amazing. Mike Patton and Dillinger? What kind of saddo wouldn't like that?
Someone just looked into the future and said, one day there'll be a man called Steve Hill and he'll really like this.
Well, they were right. Congrats. Yeah. Well done, Nostradamus.
I went for Telemark by Isan just because it's good. And I went to Telemark to speak to Isan about it and find out where it came from, which you can read at metalhammer.com. And then I went for, I never know, is it Wardruna or Vordruna? I always used to say Wardruna, but Jonathan says Vordruna.
Sounds more cool the second way, so just go with that.
Okay. Wardruna.
Or neither. Wardruna or Vordruna? Wardruna.
I've seen them a few times and I didn't think until today that I was saying it wrong, and then I suddenly started overthinking it. But they've had two singles out this year. Gra and Lifshaberg, and they've got amazing videos as well, like one with a wolf and one filmed in the mountains. They've postponed their album coming out, but those songs are really cool.
Lovely choices. I can think of some. I mean, is Jar of Flies is an EP? Does that count as an EP?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it's like a mini album.
Okay, so if that counts, then Jar of Flies is probably my fave Evs.
Oh, I thought you had to talk about this year's.
No.
I was going for 2020.
Don't think so.
I was going to say, you picked some very contemporary things.
Yeah, I thought it was for this year.
No, but that's good that you did. I mean, one of mine isn't that contemporary. It's only 10 years old now. But for some reason, two that came to mind that I still play a lot is Blood Command's Hand Us the Alpha Male EP. It's the first thing I ever heard by them. And it is brilliant, especially the title track. So good. And the Zion EP by Crossfaith, or Zion EP by Crossfaith, which is still the best thing that band's ever done. And I still listen to it like all the fucking time.
You say it's the best thing they've ever done. It's up against some pretty lukewarm competition, to be fair.
No, they've never come. They've done some like decent stuff scattered here and there, but they've never come close to matching that first EP, because it is so good.
I think I just blanked on this whole question. Now I'm trying to think of EPs.
That's all right. You gave some good modern answers. But the weird thing is about Zion is that it actually. Those songs to me sound newer now, 7 years later, than a lot of the stuff they've released since does, which I think is quite telling of how on the money it was for that first thing.
I could go through loads of really obscure, like late 90s, early noughties, hardcore self-released EPs right now, if you want me to do that, to stall for time, man. I don't know why you think of some. Because there are plenty, but people will just go, well, that's not on any streaming services. You can't buy it. And I've never heard of that band. So I don't know.
Really, my 2020 it. Choices.
Okay, fine.
That's what I've enjoyed this year.
Good. I think that's good. Stephen, would you like to read out the next question?
I bloody would. Merle, you've mentioned you run / go to the gym. And it wasn't.
Why are you laughing at that?
Well, because you don't anymore, do you? You don't go to the gym anymore.
No, I don't, no.
Because none of us can. But I know Merlin usually wakes me up by going, morning, boy, just been doing Joe Wicks. So I know you like a bit of that every day for the rest of my life. You mentioned run / go to the gym. And wasn't it mentioned before that Eleanor is a ninja? It's fucking hell. What, I missed that week. / martial artist. What are your working out playlists? That's from Andy Paul.
Well, obviously we can all answer this because I know we do all exercise in different ways. Steve's used to be a gym machine. Obviously he can't be now. So you're smashing the bike at the moment, aren't you? The old exercise bike?
Bought an exercise bike for lockdown. Yeah, been using that. Also bought a kettlebell and two what are they called?
Dumbbells.
Dumbbells, that's what they're called, yeah. I bought a couple of dumbbells as well. So I do use them in the morning when I can be bothered, which hasn't been as much as I would like recently. But I usually just put on my sort of Spotify daily mix of whatever the heavy, because I've got like, you know, you get like a daily mix every day, don't you? Yeah. And mine sort of split into the really heavy stuff, loads of sort of ridiculous 90s Britpop and like Babylon Zoo and stuff like that. Loads of 80s pop music, and then stuff like Pink Floyd and the Eagles. That's what I get every day. So I just put on the metal one and have like At the Gates, stuff like At the Gates and Slayer and Entombed are really, really good to sort of work out to, because you can grit your teeth super hard, and especially if you're doing weights, I think like Hate Breed and stuff is really good. But if I'm cycling, I usually listen to a podcast. Usually listen to you two banging on.
Oh, that's nice, Steve, when you're having a cycle.
Yeah.
Now that I know that, once randomly, like every 10 minutes on the podcast, I'm just going to be like, yeah, and so that sounds quite, keep going, Steve, don't stop. And this is quite a good thing that we're doing. Don't you give up.
Thanks, mate.
Lazy.
Oh.
Jay, yeah, that's my answer.
Cool. Who is a master ninja and empress of Tai Chi?
I've got like a few different playlists for different things. So every morning I do Qigong, which is like a sort of moving meditation part of Tai Chi. And there's like a live stream class, but afterwards sometimes I just do some by myself. And I really like Heilung for that. because they're kind of sort of can help with that sort of meditative state type thing. It's very kind of I don't know, it just sounds, it's just kind of earthy and light, a bit folkloric. And then I also like Mirka's Folk Sange from this year as well, which is another really nice one to do Qigong to. It's just got really nice like rhythms and her vocals are good. And on both of them, I think because it's like you're not focusing on someone saying English words, you can kind of get lost in them a bit more. But that's more of like a meditative type movement. And then I do Tai Chi with a fan, which is technically a weapon, and I like a bit of Deftones for that. There's a sequence that I'm learning which is really nice to do to Phantom Bride. And then with my saber, that's a bit more like energetic, and we often do it in class very slowly to Nothing Else Matters, which is really nice. But I also really like doing it to Alien Weaponry because they've got some more kind of like chanty bits and like sort of tribal sounds. And I also like doing it to King 810 because you can just, it's just quite good. Like if you think about King 810 and sort of all the songs about guns, and you've got like a big saber in your hands and you kind of just like have a little practice, that can get you in the zone.
That's going to get me nice and meditative. David Gunn going bang, bang, bang in my head.
Yeah, but a saber's not meditative. A saber is, you know, you're defending and attacking with a saber. So it's more.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's a great impression of King 810.
Thanks.
The Alpha and Omega I really like when I'm practicing with my saber.
You know, I got this gun.
You know, I got this gun, don't you?
Stop making it from the West Country.
No, it's a League of Gentlemen.
League of Gentlemen.
Yeah, I got his gun. That's what King Edward were. All right.
What are you talking about?
Have you seen the League of Gentlemen?
Yeah.
There's a character in it who, I can't remember what the context is now, but he keeps pulling out a gun at me and like, you know, I've got this gun, don't you? And it's like,
he always pulls the gun out whenever they get in an argument, like someone doesn't get his joke, he'll end up getting upset and then he'll pull the gun out. That's basically King 810's entire career, isn't it?
I really like King 810.
I love King 810, which is why I can lovingly mock them.
Yeah.
Please don't tell David Gunn because he'd bench press me for a laugh.
He would. He does martial arts too. Oh, so yeah, God. Alpha and Omega and Partway Drive, some like absolute power, that's good for Sabre as well.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent choices. Steve mentioned the daily mixes actually. I was just thinking that's always quite good at the gym. My daily mixes are banging today. I've got Slipknot on the cover of one, Ice Cube on the cover of my second one, Lady Gaga, Ghost, Prodigy and Deadmau5 on the covers of the rest. Come on.
Let's see what
my taste is amazing, mate.
Let's see what mine is.
But yeah, I do well in the normal world. I go to the gym and I do running, but at the moment I'm doing Joe Wicks. I've got resistance bands and pull-up straps, and I've just got, courtesy of Adam Segear from the Noise Cartel, who recommended this to me. I'm gonna actually show you this, what I just bought. This isn't quite as interesting for people listening, sorry, but I'm gonna find it. Hold on.
Come on, Steve, fill some dead air.
Oh yeah, so my daily mixes. My daily mixes, I've got The Blood Brothers, Jimmy Eat World, The Chemical Brothers, Earth Tone 9, Trivium, and U2.
What is Merlin putting on? Right, for people who obviously can't see this, which is everyone apart from me and Steve, it's a black headband that appears to have Velcro on either end that you then place around your head, Velcro behind yourself. There's a string hanging off the headband, and on the end of the string is a red ball about the size of a tennis ball. Merlin is wearing a headband with a ball and string attached to it.
Mate, I don't think that. I think you've been ripped off there. You just look like a fucking.
What do you do? Is it? It looks like a cat toy for
you. This is like, yeah. It's basically like, you know, like that thing where you like tie a carrot to a horse's head and then it just follows it to kind of go along. It's like that, but with a ball on the end. So the idea is, it's a boxing ball. This is recommended to me by Adam Segear, who is like well into fitness and that. So. And apparently it's supposed to sort out your boxing reflexes. So you just punch it and then you just keep punching it really lightly like this.
Oh God, I haven't actually done this yet. Can't do it.
Wow, this is terrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen.
This might be the shittiest bit of podcasting that anyone's ever done.
This is awful. Why are we doing this?
Oh man, my coordination is so shit.
Somebody do the next question. Somebody do the next question.
Surely this is going to get edited out.
Do the next question, Steve.
Right. Anyway, no, wait, I haven't done my answers yet.
That is murder for lifting weights, by the way.
I do metal for lifting weights either dance compilations or podcasts for running. I do find podcasts are really good because it takes your mind off what you're doing. And then before you know it, you've just racked up some miles. And
A bit like what just happened there. Takes your mind off the fact you're actually doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Going strap
that was awful.
Look, man, I'm going to get amazing at it and I'm going to post a video of me absolutely smashing it in a few weeks' time and then you'll be envious of me. Alistair Belling says, if you could see any band do a record in full tomorrow, what would it be? One band.
I'm going to say Deftones' White Pony because we were just talking earlier about how it's 20 years of White Pony very soon. And so that's mine and I love that record.
We should put something special together to commemorate that.
Do you think we should?
I think we should. We should release it in a couple of weeks' time.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should.
We could do that.
Good choice, Woodwatch. Steve?
I don't really like the lack of spontaneity that you get from album shows.
Yeah,
so that's not a question, but I'm not really a massive fan of album shows in full. Broadly, I don't think they're that good, to be honest.
I think it depends how people play it. I've seen album shows where it's literally like I feel like I'm sitting in my house and listening to the album, and I've seen album shows where I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah, I just think because you know what's coming and stuff, yeah. it takes away a bit of the like, oh my god, they're playing that. And not many albums are. I mean, we spoke about the Korn the other week and we were like, the first Korn album's a classic, but is every single song worth? Not really. I would pick fucking hell. I tell you what, you want to pick something they don't normally do. I'd like to see Metallica do Load in full.
Oh, fuck yeah. That, you know what? That is actually what I would watch tomorrow if I could watch anything because I've seen them play so few songs off that record. Or something totally ridiculous like Garage Inc., which I've talked about before. I'd love to see them do that. But yeah, Load would be, I mean, the best thing I have ever seen Metallica do live was seeing them do Outlaw Tour last year with an orchestra. Just incredible. And Bleeding Me is probably in my top three Metallica songs ever. Just love it. Great shout.
I'm pretty lucky that I saw them back in the day when that came out and they were playing Ain't My Bitch and King Nothing and, you know, Hero of the Day and all that stuff. They were playing it then, but they seem to have dropped pretty much all of it at this point. Like, they never really seem to play anything from it. And I know there might be people who are screaming at the moment, like, it's shit, it's rubbish. Nah, fuck off. Load's great.
Load's a great album. Yeah, I've only ever seen them play... God, I actually think... Oh, I've seen them play King Nothing. They played King Nothing at Reading a couple of years back. And I've seen them play Outlaw Tour, and that's it. Only songs I've seen them play off what is a great album.
Yeah.
God damn. Right, should we do one more question, El? Oh, of course you get this one. It's like a... Fucking hell, look at that.
Jan Ryland asks, with lockdown regulations slowly easing, I would like to know, what is the most metal flavour of ice cream?
Blood.
You know, in the zoo, they do feed lions blood ice cubes to keep them cool.
I did know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So that's the answer.
I mean... like charcoal is probably the most metal just because it's black, but I haven't actually had one. I really need to have
charcoal.
You can get activated charcoal. It's like a
why would anyone eat that?
I don't know. I've not had it.
That is literally the kind of thing where if you catch your kid eating that, you think, oh no.
There's that, and there's like a licorice one. You can get black ice cream. I think some of it's charcoal, some of it's licorice, but I haven't had
that's it. Not a charcoal's. You don't eat charcoal. Anyway, it's not a flavour of something.
I think activated charcoal's a thing. Don't have a go at me. I'm just reporting what I've seen.
No, I'm just. That's bizarre.
My favourite flavour of ice cream is poo. It doesn't matter.
The most metal type of ice cream is just a load of melted down Black Sabbath records, frozen and then turned into ice cream.
Delicious.
Yeah, yummy. I don't know. I mean,
I'm just saying that's what it looks like by sight. I'm not saying that's like the best flavour or anything.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah. Why has it always got to be? It's always something's got to be metal with you, lot, isn't it? Why can't?
Oh, yeah.
why can't you just have it with ice cream? Well, not with ice cream. You don't have to. I'm not eating that unless.
The last thing I did before lockdown was go out for ice cream to the local ice cream shop. And it was like
9 a.m.
and I was having ice cream and I was like, I'm enjoying this. I didn't realise that would be the last time.
Did you say, hello, I am a known metalhead. Can you please give me not the flavour that I like, but the flavour that is most representative of the type of music that I listen
to? They just took a strawberry cone and just ran it in some gravel and gave it to you.
I've not done the thing here. I don't know why you're having a go at me.
No one's having a go at you. We're joking.
I actually did say, though, a few weeks back that I was going to make ice cream with my Ramstein rum, and I've not done it yet. I've got the cream in the fridge, so I need to make that.
Because
I
did banging.
Say that I was going to make it. I need to and post a picture of it, so I still need to do that.
Well, so Ramstein rum flavoured ice cream would be very metal.
Yeah, I just fucking love everything with chocolate in it. I don't know if that's metal or not, but I just love everything with chocolate. Chocolate's metal.
I'll tell you what, this isn't very metal either, but fuck it, since we've gone off on one. I found a petrol station that had Easter eggs in the other day. Still selling Easter eggs. I was like, oh, beauty. When lockdown happened, I was on Easter egg a day for like two
I
months.
Actually remember that. God, that makes me realise how long lockdown's been happening. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Ice cream shop to open up so that I can go back. It's really cool. Because it stays open really late. It stays open till like 10 p.m. So you can just, and it's about a 15-minute walk from my house. So I can literally just go there and get ice cream at night time.
I guess there's no good answer to this question then. Because they're all quite legitimate. Elle actually had quite a legitimate answer for it and we just laughed it out of the...
Yeah, with lockdown easing, my most metal flavour of ice cream is going to be whatever flavour I can have when my local ice cream shop opens.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll report back on it when I've had it, when I've been to the shop.
Please do.
Yeah, you'll enjoy
it. Not on the podcast. Thanks, guys. That's it for this week's show. Three of us having a laugh. Maybe we should do another Hall of Fame soon. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'll come back and bully Eleanor some more about her ice cream. All right, that's the Hall of Fame. Yeah, big time. Yeah, that sounds good.
Is he just like being, I don't know.
What?
I don't know. Talking to each other every morning.
Yeah. It's because we're friends. Sorry.
You've got our numbers, Eleanor. You can be more than happy to accept a voice note from
me. I'm going to start texting you in the morning.
Also, I was going to say, I literally talk to you every day, Elle.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And also, sometimes we do text in the morning or evening before after work.
Exactly. So, we're all friends here. Good. That's it for this week's show. See you at Download, everybody, even if it'll be from the comfort of our own homes. But we'll be watching, so watch with us. Tweet us what you're enjoying and we'll all enjoy it. And raise a toast to our much missed lovely festival. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, stay safe out there. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
See you, mates.